Here's why you need to attend the Recruitment Coach Live Summit in London this September. Reason number one is networking. The opportunity to connect in person with like-minded recruitment business owners and share strategies and best practices. Of course, you can do that via Zoom or Teams, but the connection is deeper when you do it in real life. Wouldn't you agree? One of our previous attendees, Darcy, said that she loved the speakers and the content, but the best part for her was in between the sessions, the informal conversations with other successful business owners that sparked incredible insights and those aha moments. The quality of people in the room will be incredible, including many of the people you've heard me interview on this podcast. There's going to be big billing recruiters as well as business owners with multi-million pound businesses. What they all have in common is that they prioritize their own development. And no matter how successful they already are, they want to keep learning and growing. What's even more special and remarkable about this group is that they're all willing to share their knowledge and they're so generous at helping each other improve. Early bird pricing is still available. Register now by visiting recruitmentcoach.com/summit.
But then I said something like, we need to have patience with ourselves. And we don't understand that because we live in a world where everything needs to be really quick and everything, you want to see results immediately.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby, and I am absolutely thrilled to be joined today by Alexis Alvarez. Alexis is the founder of Career Rockstars, a boutique talent and diversity search firm that partners with the lower and middle market PE and credit players to help make diversity more of a reality in their firms. In fact, she has a 60 to 75% diversity placement rate in her company. Alexis has over 15 years recruiting experience, and she is also a podcast host herself. Her show is called Take the Stage, and it features conversations with rock stars from the world of private equity and credit. I have had the pleasure of knowing Alexis for the last 3 years. She's one of the founding members of our coaching program and global community for recruitment business owners. Actually, prior to founding Career Rockstars, Alexis led recruitment efforts in the European and Middle Eastern digital TV spaces, working with HBO Europe and Starzplay Arabia. She's got an MBA from IE Business School in Madrid in Spain, and she is also the mother of three young children. As you can imagine, she is super busy. Alexis, Alexis, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Mark. I'm super pumped to be here. I'm really excited.
This is long overdue. Why have we not done this before?
I agree. I agree. No, I'm just really excited to be here and honored actually to, you know, be a guest.
Oh, the honor is mine. Alexis, I'm really curious to learn the story behind your international lifestyle, because you are an expat living in Madrid. You are from the US and most of your clients are in the US, I believe. Why did you end up living in Europe?
Yeah, so I'm one of those, you're correct. I'm one of those Americans that went to study abroad, and to the dismay of my parents, decided I wasn't going to go back. And so it's been 17 years now that I have been residing in Spain. So, you know, I did a study abroad my junior year of college. I'm originally from Los Angeles, born and raised in the beautiful San Fernando Valley, and, you know, spent my entire life here. And when I when I was looking at study abroad options, which is something I had always wanted to do and knew from very young that I wanted to go abroad at some point, I decided to go to Spain. I spent a year there, loved it, came back, finished up my degree, and started working. And when I still didn't really have like a very clear path at the time. I began working for a nonprofit organization, working with students and professionals, and really enjoyed kind of that element of working with students, and I was a membership coordinator for the Society of Hispanic Professional Engineers. And so I really enjoyed that piece of working with students and, you know, kind of helping them. It was in many ways kind of just a very superficial, maybe top level way of, you know, kind of career coaching and kind of guiding them. And so, you know, those kind of indications were always there. But it wasn't, I think I did that for a couple of years. I even started my own business. I started my own business, again, working with international. So there's a pattern here, working with international students that were looking to come to the U.S. and believe it. So I like to joke, actually, that, and I was having this conversation with my husband the other day, because I said, you know, this was kind of, this is 2003 or four, probably four. And it was basically a really early version of Airbnb. So I was working with, what do we do in LA? We act. We have Hollywood. So I was working with the acting schools that attracted a lot of international talent. But because they weren't universities or any kind of, you know, formal institution, they didn't have, you know, like, they didn't have campuses and they didn't have like dorms or anything to help the international students that were coming to study their acting courses. So I partnered with them and I would, you know, basically try to find these international students, roommates and housing options. And so, you know, I did that for about maybe 2 years. And, you know, in after about 2 years, I was taken, after 2 years, I was taken to small claims court.
Oh, okay.
And I was 24. So I had an unhappy roommate, who took me to small claims court, and I was 24. And it wasn't, you know, in the end, nothing happened. Nothing, it didn't work out in her favor. But it was enough for me to jolt me, because that was a bit, somewhat of a traumatic experience when you're 24 and someone takes you to small claims court for something that you know, that I don't think that, that I was really at fault for. And so, at that point, so again, I'm like 24, maybe 25, and I decide, okay, you know, like I know this isn't what I want to do right now. So I would love to go back to Spain and have another international experience. I always wanted to do an MBA. So I thought, okay, these are signs from the universe, to take this pause and to go abroad. And so I decided to go and do my MBA, and I finished up my MBA it was a 1-year program, and started working right away out of my program before I graduated. I think I was one of the first people to have an offer on the table. And so I started working in Spain, and that's kind of how, you know, like how I got, my life began in Spain. I thought, well, I'll start, you know, working here for a couple of years, and then at some point I'll go back. But life just kind of happens, and, you know, you end up getting rooted. And so I ended up, after, you know, my post-MBA experience was working at a business school in their professional development, their executive education department. And here we were working, and this is kind of really where my path, I think, starts to take shape. And so I was working with multinationals that would send their employees to executive education programs. And so, you know, was working with the HR, you know, directors and development directors on these programs. And I did that for a couple of years. And then I ended up going to work for my alma mater, IE Business School, into their careers department. And that's really where I had kind of my first exposure to recruitment, because here we were working with students, getting them prepared to, you know, either begin their internship or their post-MBA work experience, and working with the companies in helping them to find talent. And so that, you know, that I did that for about 5 years, had my first child, and at that point decided, you know, I really wanted to have more freedom. And so I took a year, you know, over there. There's a lot of, you know, you have a long maternity leave. And so I was able to extend my maternity leave and really think about what it is that I wanted to do. And I ended up, you know, when I decided, you know, looking back or looking, you know, towards the future, again, I didn't really have like a clear idea, but I knew what I liked to do. And so I ended up connecting with someone. And, you know, they basically said, well, we are part of a startup and we really need help building out our team here in Spain. And, you know, would you want to help us? And so that basically turned into a 3-year gig of helping them build their tech development team. So it's a very windy path.
It's amazing.
Their tech development is in Spain because they were going to be basically, you know, this is, we're talking 2014 before the streaming services, mm-hmm. before, you know, being able to watch anything online really became, you know, like the norm. So it's still an emerging kind of product and service. And we were building out the development hub for a company that was going to launch in Spain and then it was going to launch in the Middle East. And I did tech recruitment for part of that and ended up becoming the, you know, the head of HR and recruitment. And they ended up scrapping Spain, keeping the development center in Spain, but launching the service in Dubai and in the Middle East. And so at that point, my scope changed because I was doing recruitment in the Middle East for kind of more management roles and then doing tech recruitment in Spain. And so it was a really an awesome experience because it was truly, you know, it was a heavily funded startup, which eventually went on to become Stars Play Arabia, which was acquired by, I think, Lionsgate not that long ago. But it was an incredible experience because it was my first time really in a truly, you know, recruitment heavy role. You know, my title was HR director of HR and recruitment, but it was really, you know, really recruitment was the bulk of my job. And so I got to do that in Spain and I got to do that in the Middle East and, you know, just had a boot camp, type of role, of learning not only, you know, proper recruitment, but recruitment in markets that I really had no experience in. So I had to quickly learn all the nuances of recruitment in the Middle East and Europe. So that's kind of the first part. I don't know if you want to
feel wow, it is a windy path, but I can see how each step kind of leads slowly but surely to what you're doing today. At what point did you decide, like, I want to do this for myself and, you know, turn this into a business?
Yeah. So at this point, you know, I've been in this role for a couple of years. The office in Dubai was really growing and, you know, they wanted me to move to Dubai. I was pregnant with my second child and had no interest in leaving. I have a love affair with Spain. and so I had no interest in leaving Spain. And really there was the role really needed to be based out of the Dubai office. And so I parted ways. And at the same time, the country manager for Spain had just gone to HBO and was looking at launching HBO in Spain. And basically bringing what is now HBO Max to Spain, because at the time it was all, it was cable. So there was no streaming service at that point. And so he said, well, you know, we got along really great and we worked very closely together at Stars. And so he said, you know, I need someone to help me build this team. Can you come? You know, it's a small team. There's no headcount for, you know, for someone to work recruitment. You know, would you be willing to do this kind of, you know, as a freelancer or as a consultant? I was pregnant and feeling terrible. And the thought of having to go anywhere, you know, into an office just, you know, didn't appeal to me. And so he said this to me, and I thought, this is perfect. I can work from home. And that's how I started. It was kind of, you know, this opportunity to build out. And now I look back and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like an incredible brand to be doing this for. And I'm working with, you know, all these folks from the US that have now come to Spain to help build out this, you know, this organization. And I'm now on my own doing this. And I was still in the VOD entertainment space, and HBO then became my main client. But I was on my own, and that's really kind of the humble beginnings of Career Rockstars. And at the same time, because now it's like, well, don't you do private equity recruitment? and so at the same time, one of my buddies from the MBA had just joined a middle market private equity firm in New York and was building out his team. And said the same thing to me. I need help. You know, I need help building out my team, and I need a recruiter that I can trust. And I know you, and you're working with a really great brand. So, you know, you're legit, basically, is what he said. I knew nothing about private equity, nothing. And I said, of course I can help you. Like, yeah, you know, how hard can it be? I'm working with like HBO, and, you know, thought very highly of myself. And so he brought me on. And that's, again, that's kind of like another path. So at one point in my career, I was doing, so I should also mention that like everything that I was doing with HBO and on the entertainment side was strictly in Europe. And so I ended up doing, you know, part of my work was on the European side, working, you know, HBO Spain turned into HBO Portugal, which then turned into Finland, Sweden, and a couple of other countries. And then at the same time, I was beginning this recruitment, private equity recruitment in New York. And so my, you know, working across all these different time zones. And that's what I was doing probably for about 2 years. And it ended up until about COVID, actually, and maybe a little bit before. And I always joke that, you know, while I was doing this, there's only so many conversations about Game of Thrones that you can have before, you know, you're just like, okay, there's more. And I really loved the conversations that I was having and the interviews and everything that I was learning in, you know, when I was doing these private equity roles. And I just found it much more enriching to me and to the candidates. And so that's when I decided to, you know, really kind of leave the European entertainment kind of space and really just focus on the US market and, you know, specifically within private equity.
Amazing. Wow. I don't think I know that. I knew that whole story before.
No.
I knew parts of it, but it's really interesting. So what was it about the private equity space that, you know, resonated for you that you felt like, hey, this is, I really like this. This is what I want to concentrate on.
I found everything fascinating. I found that just this concept of acquisition, of taking, you know, taking capital and looking at how to invest this. And not only, you know, because companies I work with, it's not just about financial engineering. It's about performance improvement. And how can we take a business that has done well, but hasn't really been able to, you know, kind of take that next step in their journey and really, you know, move kind of, you know, they a lot of the times are family founded businesses with lots of, you know, kind of legacy type of processes and structures. And so the firms that I work with really look at, okay, how can we improve this organization? And how can we not only, you know, increase revenue, but how can we deliver value in a different way to the organization and to the end users? And I found that piece to be really transformational. And you look at just the overall, the big picture, and there's so much potential, you know, in terms of creating, because these are companies that a lot of them fuel local economies, right? And they are, in my opinion, and this is where, this is what probably gets me the most excited. I mean, this is the engine of the economy. These are small businesses. I mean, these are businesses, you know, I'm working in a segment of the market that we're not talking the billion-dollar deals. We are talking, again, the family-founded businesses that maybe, you know, are going to be making, let's just say, less than $500 million in revenue, right? So these are, you know, not the huge businesses and the huge, you know, billion-dollar deals that you hear about in the news, right? Actually, you don't even hear about these deals, you know, unless you're in the space. So that piece I found to be most interesting, and I would listen to my candidates talk to me about exactly the types of projects that they were doing and what kinds of initiatives they were implementing and the challenges of taking a family business and having to affect change in an organization and how they went about doing that. That to me was, like I said, the most fascinating piece. And when you compared it to the other conversations that I was having, you know, like I said, with a lot of my entertainment candidates, I mean, it's interesting, you know, and not to discredit, you know, like not to devalue anything. But I just, like I said, there's only so many conversations about content, you know, like entertainment content and shows that you can have, you know, where it's just like, okay, this isn't life changing or life altering, right? But on the other hand, these conversations are, it's real life. It's real life. And these are people that are, you know, working, you know, to transform. And that's really what got me excited.
Would you like to make the transition from pure contingency to being a retained recruiter? Do you want to be respected as a true business partner by your clients while increasing your average fee? If so, then clearly you need to do something different. You can't just keep doing what you're doing and expect a different result. Our sponsor, iIntro, gives you a turnkey solution for winning retained searches and managed service agreements at higher fees. You will take business away from your competitors because you can actually show the client a unique methodology in a very tangible way and demonstrate conclusively how you will improve their staff retention and reduce their total cost per hire while also saving hours of management time. If you'd like to see how iIntro can help you to grow your recruitment business and increase your average fees, just go to recruitmentcoach.com/retain. Book a free consultation. There's no obligation. And if you mention that you listen to this podcast, iIntro have pledged to offer you a 25% discount on any of their services. Just go to recruitmentcoach.com/retained to get started. I love it. That makes total sense. So how does the diversity piece factor in then? And how did you come to the realization that that was going to be a kind of key differentiator for you and something that you really believed in and you are going to, you know, make that, how can I put this? Like you're going to make this your mission to help your clients to build more diverse companies.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I started, I thought, oh, these are just a whole lot of white guys here. That right. was like my initial thought, for lack of a better, less diplomatic way to say it. And so, you know, my initial client never said anything. They never explicitly said, oh, we'd like to see more women or we'd like to see more people of color. It just seemed very common sense to me, Mark, to say, why don't I make more of an effort to, you know, reach out to women? And you know, so it was just common sense to me. And I don't know why. Growing up in LA, you're in a really diverse setting. I don't know. It just seemed like, okay, well, let's try to branch out a little bit more and find, you know, talk to other candidates. And so I always kind of had that in mind. I started to you know, I think after about maybe 2 years or so, I started to look at my numbers. And looking back, I was like, oh, I've actually made a lot of placements that have been women. I've made a lot of placements that have been, you know, people of color and everyone that kind of maybe even falls under that umbrella of diversity. And those numbers were showing that they were, you know, depending on the year, were like between like 60 and 75%. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting. And I didn't really see a lot of that out there. And it was really like in 2020 when the world was falling apart, that I guess me being in, so I, you know, I'm in Europe and I'm working with US companies, and I'm seeing everything happen in the US from, I think, from a different lens. So I'm not living it, but I'm experiencing it in a very different way. And so I just thought, you know, what's happening, like I could be doing more. Like I can be doing more and I should be doing more. And I'm not going to join a protest because that's, I don't do that. And I won't write a letter to my senator, even though that is a civic duty that we should do. But I just felt moved to do something, and being, you know, working from a distance, I just thought, okay, well, what can I do? And that's really when I decided to double down on, you know, on increasing, you know, the number of diverse candidates that are, you know, even in this, you know, in my pipeline, at least. And that's really how it started. And what I found was that the more I talked about it, the more firms were like, yes, you know, like shaking their heads, like, yes, that we, you know, this is, we love that. And that really kind of fueled me, you know, to say, okay, there's no one is really doing this. Everyone is kind of just talking about it, but no one's really taking action. And I just thought, like, I can take more action, and this is how I can use my influence to bring about change, you know, to something that I think is important.
Amazing! I love that, because you've got a lot of, you're just full of passion and positive energy, and I love that you've found some like work that fulfills you in that way. Let's start with like, what do you feel most proud of having achieved looking back over your, you know, business and career, particularly since you've really worked for yourself?
I don't know. You know, sometimes, you know, like sometimes I feel like that question is hard. I ask that question all the time. Like, what are your major achievements, right? Or what are you most proud of? And I feel like that's hard. Sometimes when I take that step back and I think, gosh, like I am doing, I have this business. I have a pretty good brand. I'm doing it from a completely different continent. I've had, you know, like, 2 children, you know, in the meantime, while I'm doing this. And I, sometimes I think, oh, you know, like that's, you know, whatever. But then I think back like, no, that's hard.
That is hard.
That's hard. Like I have 3 kids, 2 of them were born as, you know, like one of them was probably the reason why I started my own, you know, decided to go off, you know, when I really look at it is the reason why I decided to go off on my own. But I think it's, I don't know. It's probably a couple things that I'm proud of. I'm proud that I've been able to build. I've been able to learn, I guess, so quickly, like in a space that I was afraid of private equity, like in college. Well, I didn't even know what private equity was in college, but I stayed away from finance. I was a business major, not a good sign. But I was a business major. But like the finance piece of it always made me a little bit nervous. And so, you know, I look at myself now and I can have a conversation with managing directors of, you know, these, you know, they manage billions in assets, and I can have a conversation and they listen to what I say, is what I think is like really amazing to me. And, you know, has proven to me, like, you know, I'm completely capable of doing whatever it is that I want to do, And really the only one that's limited, you know, the only thing that's really limited, me is me. So I think that it's actually, you know, having built a firm dedicated to private equity. And of course I'm extremely proud of the fact that I work with women and people of color and, you know, diverse candidates in general. And, you know, the feedback that I get is, you know, I had no idea people like you existed, and you know I appreciate the work that you're doing. And that fills I talk a lot about filling my bucket, yeah, and that fills my bucket.
I bet, absolutely. Wow, that's cool. What do you think has been some of the challenges or obstacles or setbacks that you've encountered in your journey, Alexis?
Me, I have been my biggest setback.
Say more about that.
My biggest.
What
challenge.
Do you mean?
Kind of going back to what I, you know, what I said is that, you know, I've, you know, it's those limiting beliefs. And, you know, I feel like now, you know, I'm 42 now. And I think, you know, I have a level of confidence that I didn't have, you know, like even 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
Oh, that's awesome.
And questioned myself. You know, question what, like, do I belong, you know, like, I mean, of course, I think that's very normal to have, you know, to have those sentiments. Like, what am I doing? Do I even know what I'm doing? Do I even know what I'm doing? I've never worked in private equity. You know, I've never worked on a deal, you know, and you're speaking with incredibly bright people all the time. And so that has made me, especially earlier on, a little bit insecure. Mm-hmm. And I think that really limited kind of maybe my growth and the growth of the company because, you know, you just kind of think, oh, you know, I can't do that or I'm not smart enough. Or if only I found myself saying, like, if only I could understand it, like, you know, differently, or if only I had experience here. And now I look back and I think, okay, well, you know, that's BS. Like, you know,
absolutely.
Like it's really just me giving myself excuses,
right.
is about what I see. Right. So I think that I have been the biggest setback to myself, the biggest challenge to myself is that mental piece of it. Because obviously as a business owner, that the mental piece is a huge part of it.
Huge.
And so that has become more evident, with every year in this business and every year that I go around the sun. Right?
Absolutely. So let's just talk about that a little more because you are so right. I think that is inevitably the biggest roadblock or limitation is ourselves and our own mindsets. So, which is, it's hilarious. Like from the outside looking in, you know, you're a multilingual business owner with an MBA, you know, obviously an incredibly smart and capable person. And yet we're always our own worst critic, aren't we? So, you know, the way other people see you is completely different often to how we see ourselves. And we are inclined to sort of minimize or downplay our brilliance and to focus in on like what we're not amazing at or are, you know, weaknesses and that sort of thing, and almost magnify those. What do you think helped to dislodge some of those limitations and embrace like this new confidence that you're developing?
You. Oh. that was a big part of it. That was certainly a big part of it. I guess I have to give credit to my husband,
I guess. He can have some credit.
I guess. I have to give credit to my husband because he was actually, you know, like, I had never really thought about coaching. I had never really thought about coaching. It was more me kind of just saying out loud, I wish someone could help me or that could show me how to do this. And, you know, he came across something, you know, it was actually like another group and he was like, well, you know, look, these people reached out to me and, you know, this is, maybe you want to consider it. And it was kind of like, well, yeah, maybe like, you know, and so the more like, and then, you know, the magic's in the follow-up, right? Because they kept following up with him, not me, they kept following up with him. And so he kept telling me about it. And it sparked my curiosity, and I ended up opening myself up to, oh, okay, well, look, I didn't even know that there were people that did this. And so that really was probably the first part of me embarking on this kind of maybe personal development journey that I hadn't, I hadn't thought of. And so, I ended up, coming across some of your content and then, joined the group, and that really helped to just, open up the melon, right? And makes you think in a very different way. And at least, for me, and that's, I talk a lot about this with my clients and my candidates is, and I have I kind of created a framework with the work that I do. And one of them is about being patient. And I found myself patience is like a concept that is very overlooked and very under, it's under appreciated. And I found myself just last week saying, to someone, you need to have patience with, I was talking in the context of diversity, but then I said something like, we need to have patience with ourselves. And we don't understand that because we live in a world where everything needs to be really quick, and everything, you want to see results immediately. And when you don't, it's disheartening, and it's very easy to say, oh, this, doesn't work, or, whatever it may, you lose your patience, right? You just,
yep. Been there.
And so, for me, I don't know. It's taken a little while. It's not immediate, right? Like, you don't just have these mind blowing moments and then say, okay, life is going to be different. No, it's gradual, right? But the key is to be consistent. And so that's really what, I think helped this transformation, is that you open yourself up to development, and then, it starts to happen little by little. And that's where really the patience piece comes in. So it's been, 3 years that I've been in the group, and I find that I'm still, I'm still on the journey, and hopefully the journey doesn't end ever. Right. As much as I don't like thinking, there are some things that I don't know, or I wish I was better at. I feel like I also need that to keep me, pushing me along, to keep wanting to be better and wanting to learn more, and, to continue to be hungry, I guess, is
love it.
What I'm trying to say.
Fantastic, Alexis. That's so cool. Could you talk a little bit about this framework that you developed? Because I think that's really powerful.
Yeah. So, there's patterns in our lives, right? and so I, like, just like I mentioned how I, the diversity piece was kind of just, it started as something common sense to me. It was the same thing where I was thinking okay, what do I see are the problems when I'm working with firms when it comes to attracting diverse talent? And what do I think needs to be in place in order for them to be successful? And so when I started to, I started to write it down. I was asked to present at a client's meeting and present, a 45-minute PowerPoint. And I thought, well, what do I present? And so I actually started to put down everything that I did onto paper. And I realized, again, going back to common sense and just simple concepts of, I thought, well, this is really what is needed. It's not, we're overcomplicating things, because that's just what humans are good at doing, right? Overcomplicating things. And so I thought, well, it's about patience. So what does that mean in this context? It means that diversity, so finding a underrepresented group to work in your firm takes time, because there's, a number of reasons why. But patience is a key part. And so that means you need to plan in advance. You need to, plan 1 or 2 quarters in advance. And then I thought, with my own personal journey, nothing really happened until I became like really, really happened until I got really clear on the purpose, like why I'm doing things, what I wanted to achieve. And then, of course, you have to move with intention. So it's kind of credibility through action, right? So you being very intentional with what you're doing. And it's something that like patience, purpose, and intention, that framework, I've started to apply it to everything that I do. So not only with the clients that I work with and telling them how to help them and what they need to do and what patience in their context means and purpose and intention in their context means, but like with candidates who, you know, want to make a move. It's the same simple concepts that are applied, but just you're adapting them to different scenarios. And personally, like when I reflect on everything that I, everything that I've done, I thought, well, nothing happened, until these three things were present, until I understood, okay, it's not going to happen overnight. You know, anything good is not going to happen overnight. And you have to have a very clear idea of what you want. And then you have to move with intention, like everything from finding my husband to, you know, living in Spain to building my business, all of those things. And I realized that. And I'm like, okay, this is what I'm doing. And this is what others can do or can replicate, to help get them where they want to be, especially in terms of diversity.
Amazing. So patience, purpose, and intention. I love that. And Alexis, you've not mentioned a couple of amazing things that you've achieved, which, so I'm going to remind you and then you can talk a little bit about those. So one of which was, launching your podcast. So can you say a little more about why you did that and how it's benefiting the business and also, you know, the PE industry?
Yeah. So again, I'm going to like have to toot your horn because actually you're the reason why I have a podcast, I think, Mark, because in our, you know, one of our first calls, I said, you know, I don't like to feel like I'm selling to anyone. And that for me is, you know, I don't know if it's because I'm millennial. I don't know what it is. If I'm even millennial, what you consider me. But one of the things you said to me was, you know, why don't you try to do a podcast? Because I had never, let me take a few steps back. I had never really had to do business development before in my business because I had the privilege, which is a double-edged sword, of never having to actively seek out new business because new business was always referred to me. And I would land a client based off of someone else's referral. So extremely fortunate to have that. But at the same time, not very wise to only rely on referrals. I had a moment at some point where I was like, I can't do this. Like, this doesn't make sense. I need to seek out more business. But I had never been in this type of role. And so I was very reluctant to try any of the traditional channels, right? You know how I feel about cold outreach. I do not like to do cold calling. And I felt like, you know, especially a few years back, there was more of a conversation around cold calling compared to some of, you know, a lot of the other channels that are out there now. And so one of the things you suggested was a podcast. And obviously, you know, like I like to talk, as we've already established. And so I thought, well, that could be really interesting. And so I decided to, you know, have this podcast. And I would call it, you know, since my firm is called Career Rockstars, I would call it Take the Stage. And I really wanted to focus on women because women became... female candidates became a really challenging segment to recruit for private equity and just the overall investment space. And so I thought that this could be really interesting to connect and to hear stories from women in the space. And so I dedicated a series called Ladies Who Rock that was just going to be exclusively focused on women in, you know, that are either well-established or up-and-comers. And, you know, it was probably the smartest business decision that I've ever made, because I think all of my business for the last 2 years has come either directly or indirectly off the heels of the podcast. So, you know, now I do business development. And one of the things that I like to lead with is, or an easy way to lead, to start a conversation is with the podcast. And so I would, for the first 2 years, really just focus on, on reaching out to women across all levels. And it was just a really easy, I found it very seamless. And not only were these people, really flattered that, were being invited to be a podcast, and the ones that were maybe not so flattered and didn't really, think that they would want to do it, were very kind and, would refer me potential guests, or, they didn't want to be a podcast guest, but they wanted to do business with me. And so it's really been a great experience. And now I'm 2 years in, and I've expanded now. Actually, my first episode this week for the broader platform, Take the Stage, was launched, and so now I'm speaking to to men and to women, and hearing these different perspectives, but all under kind of the this diversity landscape. And so I made it a point. I think that this is a really important piece to not. And actually, I just had a conversation with a candidate that I placed right before I did this call. And he said, he's like, I really like your podcast because it doesn't just talk about deals. Because in private equity and in the investment space, you talk a lot about the deals, everything that went into it, that's been done. And I wanted to hear their stories. I made it a point to not only speak with senior folks, like the managing directors and, the really seasoned people, because I felt, I spend a lot of my time talking to early career professionals. So these are people that have 2 to 3, let's just say, somewhere between 2 to 5 years of professional experience. And there's really nothing out there for them in terms of resources or content. Everything's out there is with the deal makers and people that have maybe 15, 20, 30 years of experience on them. And so I really wanted to have something where you could have someone that has 3 years of experience and listen to a peer talk about their journey. How did they get into it? What, what did they do? The lessons and the insights that they can share. And so the show really, talks to a really broad audience in terms of seniority level, because I think it's important to tell everyone's story and not just focus on, the ones that have already made it. They're important too, but I think it's also really great to hear someone that's at your level or just, the next level above you, and to hear what that experience is. So that's kind of been my journey to date with the podcast.
I love that. You're doing a phenomenal job, Alexis, with your podcast and also just your content in general. People should definitely check you out on LinkedIn, Alexis Eva Alvarez, and see the kind of stuff you're posting as well, because you are really doing a fantastic job of building your brand and your authority in your space, and really becoming known, as the person who makes diversity reality for lower and middle market PE firms. So I love how you're really owning that, that niche, and you're being very visible and valuable around that. So that's super cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. And
go ahead. All right. No, I was just going to add that you don't know who, at the end of the day, you don't know who you're reaching and who you're talking to. Yep. And I feel like this, we need to harp on this a lot, because, I never posted up until I joined your group. That's another thing. I never posted anything, not one post on LinkedIn. And so I started doing that when I joined the group, and I made it very intentional with my posts. And everyone knows, sometimes it's like, no one liked it, or, you know, we don't get that self-gratification. And it's like, what? It took me like, you know, it took me like an hour to write the post, and I'd like nothing happened. And at the end of the day, you don't know, even if you don't have a lot of like the metrics don't seem like they're there. I have at least two or three examples of someone that referred someone to me that I'm not even connected with, or that I've never spoken to. Tell them, that person, like, oh, you should talk to Alexis because she's, you know, she's the one you want to speak to. And I think, who referred you? Oh, so-and-so referred me and said that, you know, like, yeah, you're the person I need to speak to. And I look, and that someone has, you know, like, we are maybe a second connection, or we've connected on LinkedIn, but we've never engaged in a conversation. And so it just goes to show you that, you know, you're being heard and you're being seen, and you leave an imprint, even though it doesn't really like look like that, you know, from where you sit. So it's really important. I think it just, I can't underestimate or emphasize that enough, that just how important it is to be present on LinkedIn. So that's
I'm so glad you shared that story, because, well, that's patience, purpose, and intention again, isn't it? It's another example of that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's so true. Like, it takes courage to put yourself out there, right? Whether it's through a podcast or publicly, like sharing content on LinkedIn, especially if it's your own original ideas or your, you know, original content, and you're creating something and putting it out there. And you really can never know the impact that's going to have and what people and opportunities that might attract. And it's just amazing how that can really snowball. There's a really long tail as well with podcasts. So, you know, someone might listen, you've been doing this for 2 years now, and, you know, it's those episodes that you recorded 2 years ago are still assets that are working for you, because someone might come across one of your previous episodes or find your show and start consuming those episodes. And that work that you did way back then is still having a positive impact now. So there is, it's just amazing what can happen. Could you also tell the
100%.
Yeah, yeah. Could you tell the story? Because I was really proud when this, I heard this, that you beat Heidrick and Struggles in a pitch and won that really amazing piece of business.
Yeah, you're right. Like, I forgot the, forgot about that. Yeah, that was actually huge. And just, you know, I had worked with a client in the US on a role in the, you know, for their office in the US. They were expanding into Europe, you know, and they, I said, you know, they knew I was based in Madrid. And I said, well, hey, you know, I'm in Europe and, you know, I have experience in some of the other European markets. And so I'm happy to help. And, you know, they gave me, you know, a VP level role. And so I said, okay, you know, I'm happy to work on this VP level role. And about a week later, they had said, you know, you know, if you happen to find some candidates that could be for the MD level, you know, maybe you want to, you know, just let us know. And so, you know, I kind of thought, all right, well, you know, I'll keep that in mind. And I ended up becoming, you know, again, they were all American. They had no experience, at least the recruitment team in the US, working with any European market. And so, you know, things, you know, they were working in the Netherlands. So a lot of different nuances, to kind of deal with. And, you know, I said, well, you know, I have some really great candidates for you for the MD role. And, you know, they said, okay, you know, like this is great. And they said, you know what, we're not happy with Heidrick and Struggles. You've just been, I guess I delivered a different level of service to them. It not even, you know, like in this initial, you know, like the ramp up, right? And so I think that they were evaluating, you know, kind of looking at who to work with. And I think that, you know, the fact that I was American, but in Europe, and, you know, helping them and letting them know, well, look, this is how things are done here. This is what, you know, like the little different cultural nuances that you might come across. And this is where, you know, like these are what candidates look for in Europe. And these are just giving a whole lot of color to someone that maybe doesn't have that international experience. And so, you know, when I told them that I had my, you know, that I had candidates for them, and I had like three of them, and they were lined up and ready to go, they're like, we're not going to even consider Heidrick anymore. So that was, yes, that was just like, you know, I was like, oh, all right, well, that's great to hear. And I got off the phone and I was like,
amazing. I love that story.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, yeah. And you end up filling both of those positions, didn't you?
So I ended up filling the managing director role, which was huge, because I had never done a managing director role before. And so that was huge. And it was a really awesome opportunity. And then they ended up giving me two more roles on top of that for that particular office. So I ended up placing like three, you know, and it was a small office. And so three of those roles, three of like a 10 person team were filled by me.
Amazing.
So it was awesome.
What I love is the domino effect here, Alexis, like how things, the work you're doing leads into something else, which leads into even more opportunities. You know, working on an MD level role almost allows you to do business development without doing business development, because your recruiting calls and those meetings with candidates then become, you know, essentially meetings with also future, you know, potential clients. So it just opens up so many more avenues for you as well.
No, it's, you know, yeah, it was awesome, because take away the piece of like, you know, like it's a big fee and it's a big role. The confidence that I had after that is like probably the most important win the fee is good, but the confidence piece, because I don't know, it was almost like proving to myself, I can do this.
Yes.
Like I've done it. I just did it and I did a good job. And, you know, again, I feel like the times that I've struggled in my life, whether it's my career or personal life, it has been when I've overthought things, when I overthink it, and just, you know, just don't do it, right? Or it's like I didn't even think about it in terms of like, oh my gosh, I don't know what a managing director, you know, I've never done this. I just did it, and I was like, okay, just and that's something that I find myself saying a lot now, just, you know, just do it. Just continue to do it every day, even when you don't want to do it, or even when you don't think you can do it, or you don't think you're doing a really good job. Just do whatever it is that you need to do to get whatever job that you're trying to do done. Because that, you know, it's like those little steps that are going to really, you know, you look back and you're like, oh, okay, they were micro steps, but they were, you know, 150 micro steps. So, you know, like that actually, that there's progress there. So, yeah.
Amazing. I love it. Could we talk briefly about being a working parent? Because we both have three kids. Mine are now teenagers. In many ways, it's getting easier. There's new challenges, but in terms of the amount of time, effort, and, you know, lack of sleep and all that stuff that goes into it, that's that part's a lot easier. But I remember when they were little, like, in fact, there's probably about a 5 to 10 year period where I was just continuously sleep deprived, and you still have to perform at work, right? And you still have to make stuff happen. How have you manage that piece? Because on the outside looking in, it looks like you have absolutely figured this out and you're like the queen of, you know, business, you know, running a business and being a mom at the same time. What's your secret there?
Oh, there's no secret. I lose my mind probably, you know, at least once a day. In summer, I find that it's like intensified more, right, when they're not in school. But I think, I mean, when they were little, so when it was just kind of maybe the two of them, I mean, I had my son, you know, like, I didn't want to, I'll tell the secret now, like, I didn't want to tell HBO or maybe it was the third one. I, you know, I have too many kids.
I know.
I don't remember which one it was, but I remember with both of them, I think it was the last one. I didn't want to mention that I was like, I think they called me like on the way to the hospital for my cesarean. And I didn't want to say like, I'm having a baby today. You know? And so I was like, yeah, I could start. It was like a Wednesday. And I'm like, yeah, Monday I'll work. And I worked.
Oh,
and I kicked off a call and you know, and I did that. Why?
That's insane. Like, what were you thinking?
I don't know, but it was manageable. It was manageable. It wasn't something that was like, you know, crazy. But I remember like having, you know, with both of the last ones, like my son and my daughter, you know, like feeding and then doing a call, and, you know, then like, you know, putting the baby down and like going back and doing that. But in many ways, I really appreciated that because it was, I worked from home and it was convenient and I could schedule that. And I wouldn't have necessarily had that freedom. If I was employed, I would have been on a maternity break and it probably would have been a little bit easier. But I mean, I thought it was manageable. And I don't remember, to be honest, Mark, I feel more stressed out now that my kids are grown up. Grown up now that they're 4, 7, and 10 than when I had, you know, when the two were babies. And I just feel like they, you know, like they're at different stages right now where it is harder to balance everything. I don't even know if balance is the right word. I feel like balance, like you're never really balancing anything,
exactly.
Right? Like that's maybe a myth. Like it's like managing, I try to manage everything, you know? And so I don't know if I'm doing a good job. I mean, sometimes it's easy to be hard on yourself and say like, I'm not doing a good job, but I find that like, I try to make time for them. Like I have a hard stop. So in Europe, I have a hard time, I have a hard stop at 7 PM European time, which is 1 PM Eastern time. So that means that like all my calls need to be done before, you know, early afternoon on the East Coast or, you know, by 10 AM Pacific time. And that's like a non-negotiable. I sit down and we have dinner with them or together, all of us as a family. And that's like what they've come to know.
Yeah.
Whether it's a peaceful dinner is like a completely different story.
No,
but we are
but at least you're together.
We're sitting down and yeah. And that's like a for sure thing. That's a for sure thing. And so I think that like when, you know, I think it's about looking at like, okay, what is that? What do I want? Do I want to have, that was always something that I had in my family. Like I knew for sure that we were going to be eating dinner together matter what. And we were eating at the table always. And so like for me, that's really important. So I make sure that we have that. And then, you know, like it's never going to be perfect, right? Like I feel like we have that. It's a myth to think that it's going to be perfect and that it's going to be easy because it's not. Owning your business is never easy.
Yeah.
Being a parent is never easy. Doing it together is, you know, it's never easy. So I think it's just understanding that and saying, okay, it's not perfect. I'm not perfect. This isn't perfect, but we do the best that we can. And you know, you take those moments and try to replicate them as much as possible.
I love that. And maybe it's about patience, purpose, and intention again.
And it is about a whole lot of patience.
But you're right. Yes. Getting as many of those moments as possible. I think that's well said. Alexis, this was a fun conversation. Thank you so much.
I love it. Yeah, I know. This was like having a little, you know, felt like having a little drink, little coffee time break here.
Definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And can't wait to see you soon.
Thank you, Mark. I loved it.
Thanks again. thank you for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. I know how busy recruiters are, so I'm honored that you're investing this time with me each week. I don't take your attention for granted. That's why I'm going all out to deliver value for you here, real insights you can apply to improve your business. And if you really want to help me to reach a wider audience and impact more people, please consider leaving the show a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you leave me a review, please reach out and let me know so I can thank you personally. Please hit the subscribe button and I'll see you next time.